ராமாய ராமபத்ராய ராமச்சந்திராய வேதசி ரகுநாதாய நாதாய சீதாயாஹ பதயே நமஹ. அயோத்தியா காண்ட் சாப்டர் நம்பர் 59, தி ரிபென்டன்ஸ் ஆஃப் கிங் தசரதா. தி ரிசைட்டல் பிகின்ஸ் நவ். When I turned my chariot towards Ayodhya, the horses yoked thereunto shed tears of unutterable grief and said to themselves, we congratulated ourselves too fondly that we had secured through the merit laid up in former births the opportunity to serve the Lord far beyond the reach of Brahma and the other high gods. Alas, envious fate has dashed the cup from our lips. Life holds for us nothing pleasant or desirable. Vain, utterly vain has been this life of ours. And thus, a prey to consuming sorrow, they would not consent to come away from Rama, even though I, the stony-hearted wretch, could bring myself to perpetrate that horror. I had a very hard time of it, dragging them to Ayodhya every moment against their will. I survived that stroke of misfortune, took reverent leave of Rama and Lakshmana, and turned my face towards this city. But I had a sneaking hope and desire that Rama might relent and perhaps send for me again. In that hope, I stayed with Guha, the dear friend of Rama, for 3 days, and my grief bit me not so deep. Your all-mastering desire to please Kaikeyi and the heedless act you were led into in consequence have plunged the whole world in grief and misery. Rama is, as you well know, the sole and the inner ruler, as it were, of all beings in the universe. Naturally, trees, plants, creepers, flowers, fruits, leaves and shoots have dried up and withered by the scorching fire of grief that consumes them. For have they not their very life in Rama? The cool, pellucid waters of the rivers, lakes and pools is now scalding to the touch. The hardy forest trees that look not to man's kind efforts to water them dry up and wither as readily as the delicate trees and plants so carefully nurtured in the groves and gardens by the fostering care of man. Birds and beasts sit dazed and move not. The fierce animals of prey, ever restless, are now sunk in hopeless torpor. The forest haunts wear a stillness of death, and the millions that inhabit it are speechless with woe. The petals of the lotus shrink and drown themselves beneath the waters. The pure streams and watercourses run muddy and discolored. The flowers in the lotus pools are scorched and shriveled. The fish below and the fowl above lie motionless with grief. The flowers that grow on land and water are dull of color and devoid of perfume. Sweet fruits turn insipid and repulsive. Gardens and walks are now deserted and still. Birds lie in their nests in dead faint. Groves and gardens have lost their cheerful, attractive look. No one evinces any joy or delight when I enter Ayodhya. They find Rama's place in my chariot empty and heave hot sighs and frequent like a furnace. Tears course down their cheeks ever, and they stir not from the royal abodes and public walks, from storied palaces and turreted mansions. Noble ladies observe me driving back the royal chariot empty of Rama, start in affright and cry, ah, alas, gaze at one another blankly and burst into tears. Your friends at Ayodhya are in no way distinguished from strangers or enemies. I see no difference in the measure of their grief of separation from Rama. A people melancholy and joyless, elephants and horses, weak and faint from grief and misery, wails, laments, groans, sobs and sighs, paining your ears at every turn. This fated Ayodhya that quivers with agony of her unendurable torment resembles in many respects Lady Kaushalya here, on whom lies heavy the misery and misfortune of having been deprived of her world-honored son. And as Sumantra, through a storm of tears and sobs, proceeded to describe the harrowing fate of all beings, Dasharatha, impelled by his guilty conscience, said to himself, verily, this Sumantra has answered my queries but too well. I have got more than I wanted, more than I bargained for. one could see with half an eye how he points out to me as the author of all this ruin and evil. He silently acquiesced in it and replied, Sumantra, Kaiki basely deceived me, got me to promise her boons, and when I least expected it, put a screw upon me to fulfill them. What could I do? She is an adept in wickedness and comes from a race grown gray in sin. So it was that I, in utter folly, took no counsel with friends, ministers, or citizens, and on the spur of the moment perpetrated this horrible iniquity, driven to it by the wiles of a woman, and to win a smile of her fickle false lips. This great grief has befallen, without any apparent reason, this fair line of Ikshvaku, and I naturally infer from it that the time is near when it will be extinguished under the weight of the accumulated sins of its past. Sumantra, if you remember any kindness I have shown you in the long past, prove your gratitude by taking me as quickly as you can to where my Rama is present. My life is present. My life breaths threaten to escape this tortured frame that hardly holds them back. Sunk as I am in the depths of woe, my rule and power is yet undiminished, and I lay on you my commands to start at once and bring back Rama to my side, for I feel I cannot live without him even for one muhurta. If my boy has traveled far by this time, take me to where he is, and let me draw life and light from his countenance. Alas, what have I on whom already fall the shadows of death? What have I in common with the noble hero whose even row of beautiful teeth shame the buds of the kunda? A desperate sinner, I, what hope for me to be so blessed as to catch a sight of him? Let me but look once again at Rama and Sita, and I am sure to bid defiance to death. I am hurried all unwillingly into the jaws of the monster, and can keep myself back only by having a sight of the fair and lovely face of Rama, lighted up by his beautiful eyes and lovely ears adorned with costly gems. What greater misery for me than to depart from this life without being able to see Rama, the glory of the line of Ikshvaku. Ha, Rama, Lakshmana, Janaki, what dire misery have I brought upon you? Have you all but have lost you all practically in that you see me not torn from this life by the fangs of the poignant grief at being separated from you? And like wax in the midst of a hot furnace, his grief melted his heart and drowned him in the depths of woe. A vast ocean it is for me to be torn from the side of Rama, its shores, and my last look of Sita, the deep sighs that tear at my heart are the fathomless eddies. My fast falling tears are the foam on its waves. My tossing to and fro in restlessness and pain are the huge fish that cleave its waters. The unceasing wails and laments on all sides are the thunder of its billow. My aged locks that lie disheveled in dirt and dust are the moss and fungus on its surface. Kaiki, the fiend, is a quenchless fire. Bhadava, my tears are the inexhaustible source wherefrom it flows unceasingly. The insidious counsel of the black-hearted Mantra, or the huge monsters of the deep, the boons that Kaiki got out of me, are the waves that threaten to reach the heavens. My heartless exile of that god-like Rama aptly represents the extent of it. Whelmed in this fathomless gulf of sorrow, how can I hope to cross it safe without Rama? I implore and entreat to be allowed to be able to see Rama and Lakshmana, but me, I am fated to die with a cry upon my lips. Need I any worse omens of the fate that awaits me? So raved he in many a wise, and toppled from his seat in a dead faint. Kaushalya observed that he wept and raved more piteously than ever, and her heart was filled with mighty fear of what terrible fate might befall her beloved husband, even as her mother's heart was tortured to think of what cruel dangers lay in wait for Rama in the dark and dreary forests. मंगलम कुशलेन्द्राय महनीय गुणाब्दे चक्रवर्ती धनुर्जाय सर्वभौमाय मंगलम।